Today on Movie Wireless, we bring you part two of our coverage of Tribeca Film Festival 2016. It's time for Movie Wireless. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wireless is your daily dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of the airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
We're on location. We forgot to say that yesterday.
Yeah, I guess we call these live podcasts in as much as a live
podcast. Well, we're alive.
Well, we are alive after the two full-on days of Tribeca Film Festival. But yeah, we call them live podcasts because we do them live from the film festival, but a podcast can't really be live as a medium unless we get into live streaming, which requires servers and millions of dollars, which we don't have. But anyway, so we...
Joe's really tired.
I was pushing for advertising.
Yeah, I know. There.
Somebody wants to sponsor us, please do. It's been great fun, actually. Exhausted. We saw between this six movies today on day two.
I think more.
Was it more?
Six.
We're only going to talk about six today in this update.
Six is plenty.
I'm going to read the titles out briefly, just so that you know that they're coming. We have Devil in the Deep Blue Sea, Do Not Resist, Keep Quiet, the intriguingly named Pistol Shrimps, Don't Look Down, and After Spring. So it's going to be a busy podcast. Do you want to hit them up in that order?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, so let's start with Devil and the Deep Blue Sea.
Okay, so Devil in the Deep Blue Sea is directed by Bill Purple, and he's famous. I just looked it up for if any of you like the show New Girl, he does that. But anyway, Henry is an introverted architect, and after the death of his wife in a car accident, he sets out to help Millie, a homeless teen, to build a raft to sail across the Atlantic. And this stars Jason Sudeikis, Jessica Biel, and Macy Williams. Yes, that Macy Williams from Game of Thrones. So we all saw this one.
We did.
So Yazdi, why don't you kick us off?
So this movie, at least the initial part, seems identical to what's playing in the cinemas right now, which is a movie called Demolition, with a very near identical premise. Also, Jake Gyllenhaal is in that movie where he also is dealing with the death of his wife, and you know, ultimately by breaking things down and rebuilding them, and that's where this movie is also going. I must also confess, as I have before, that you know, I'm always on Jason Sudeikis' side. I think he's a very good, very agreeable screen presence. I like Jessica Biel as well. There are some early signposts. The movie uses a lot of shorthand because the earlier events happen very quickly in the movie. And those signposts don't always work very well, but in this movie, they work remarkably well. So those are all the good things about the movie, because everything else is bad.
Oh,
it's really bad. I didn't care for any of the rest of the movie. I had a hard time even remembering things. And I would recommend people watch Demolition, or that they watch Jason Sudeikis' Sleeping with Other People, which was shown at Tribeca last year, which is a far, far superior, fun movie.
Joe?
It's not the fault of the movie, but like you, Yazdi, I'm blending this with Demolition, because both movies have, like you say, such very similar premises. It's unfortunate, it's somewhat coincidental, but nonetheless, they both appeared, at least in my world, in a very similar period of time. And Demolition is obviously the superior one here. This movie, it just feels a little conventional and by the numbers. It felt to me like it played everything very safe. There was nothing that it kind of brought new to the world of film. I think everything that we saw in this movie we had seen before, and you know, as a result, it just felt a little tired. The plot didn't work. It was a little bit strained in the sense of he had this relationship with this little girl who was supposed to be missing, but I couldn't quite get over the fact that, you know, there were wanted signs of this little girl everywhere. And so, you know, there were a lot of little things in this movie that didn't quite work for me, and overall it ended up not working in total. So yeah, I hate to say that, because obviously this is somebody's work that we're critiquing here, but it was not a very effective movie.
I agree. I think the problem is it's just a bit too dull. And I think it's trying too hard, and it takes too many jumps and leaps in the story which ultimately is just so implausible and unrealistic. And I think that there's a grittier version of this story somewhere. I just don't think this is it. This feels like a less gritty version of Demolition. I think there could have been a lot made and a lot of dialogue around this relationship of an older man and a 16-year-old girl, which they didn't seem to want to go to, mm-hmm. although they kind of like skirted around the issue. And Yasdi, you talk about this a lot, I think probably in even yesterday's podcast, which was there seemed to be a lot of stories about older men who, having to find themselves through the you know, friendship or companionship of a younger person. And I don't think we've seen the older man, younger girl situation
combination
before.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was a real lost opportunity. And frankly, it's just so overcooked. There's so many tropes in this. The mother-in-law, the boss, the workers, you know, the construction workers who work in the house, this kind of New Orleans, pigeon yeah. French that's going on. It was just all a bit twee and just didn't work. And it's not often we come to a film festival and see films that are really bad. This one's really bad. I agree with Yasdi.
I mean, I really like the part... initial parts between him and Jessica Biel. It was a little too cutesy, but by movie conventions, I still bought it. But I did not buy the latter half of the movie. And, you know, I don't know if they were... You know, there was a documentary which won Best Documentary Prize 20, 30 years ago about this person who was obsessed and he went on a raft, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. And then there was 2 years ago, the movie which won Best Foreign Film was a movie called Kon-Tiki, which kind of,
Oscar nominated.
Also Oscar nominated, which kind of dramatized those whole events.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that kind of piece of that kind of very crudely attached to this movie, where this girl and both him, they want to get on a raft and go away and go to the, you know, cross the ocean on this raft. It just seemed, you know, there's, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to be whimsical, but this just seemed implausible. So
it especially nice ideas here, but it failed.
Yeah,
let's move along.
Yes,
so our second movie is Do Not Resist, and Yaz,
I will. So Do Not Resist is directed by Craig Atkinson, and according to the Tribeca film notes, in this particular movie, the director, through keen and thoughtful observances, presents a startling and powerful exploration into the rapid militarization of police forces in the United States. Filmed over 2 years in 11 states, Do Not Resist reveals a rare and surprising look into the increasingly disturbing realities of American police culture. So this is a red hot topic right now. It's on everybody's mind. And Joe, you were the only one who saw this?
I really wanted to watch this one.
Tell us.
And you should. This is an incredibly powerful documentary. It's the most powerful of the documentaries that I've seen so far here at the film festival. And in many ways, it kind of gets you to question what's happening in the country right now. And it really talks about the militarization of the police in a way that is not talking about specific events. So we've had the events of Ferguson and the various shootings and how they've precipitated this type of riot reaction by the police. But the movie's not necessarily about that. What this movie seems to be saying is that, and it's overall underlying theme, is that there has been, over the course of, you know, a number of decades within the United States, this excess buildup of military equipment mm-hmm. that is now available at no charge or at federal government subsidized money available to local police departments pretty much on request. And so police departments are exploiting this. And the central premise of the central message of the movie seems to be that they are exploiting this ability to get military equipment. And then once you have it, you kind of want to use it, right?
Right,
it's a toy that you have available to you.
Especially if you've been trained.
And there has been a rapid increase in the past decade of the number of SWAT actions mm-hmm. by local police forces. It was fewer than 10,000 a decade ago. And something like, you know, the last 2 years, it's gone up to something like 80 to 90,000 SWAT alerts. They follow these SWAT teams on a couple of drug busts. You know, one poor family end up with, you know, they have a child who lives in the house and, you know, has been known for marijuana. But this kid gets busted for, you know, a small possession of marijuana. There's a whole SWAT team sent to the house. They destroy the property by getting in. And, you know, it seems like overwhelming force. And I think that's the point of the movie, that there seems to be this willingness by the police to go in with heavy, heavy military. And there's a lot of factors that weigh into that. So,
I mean, I guess the counter argument, I didn't watch the movie, would be that hopefully it serves as a deterrent for those criminals if they think that there's going to be military action at their door versus... But you know, a cop with a gun.
But should there be military action on the streets of the United States? I mean, we need to have a police force that can obviously deal with any situation, and we've had that because it's unconstitutional to deploy the military in the United States. But what's happened here is that we're getting around that by militarizing the police.
Weapons, yeah.
Interesting.
And so that's a central premise of the movie, but it's incredibly powerfully done. It built me with this huge sense of dread throughout the entire movie based on, you know, what is actually happening in some of these states and what's happening in some of these cities. So just a very powerful documentary. It certainly has a point of view. I didn't necessarily agree to all of it, but nonetheless, it's eye-opening in terms of the facts and figures that it presents and some of the case studies that it has simply by following these SWAT teams around. It's undeniably embarrassing for us that this should ever happen in a country like the United States.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a very serious, complex issue. Very, very hotly
debated. That's being debated, right.
So I think this is essential. So, and I haven't watched the documentary, but my sense from whatever little I've read about it is there's also a perception that very often these very, very sophisticated military weapons are being given to the police without the necessary training or without the necessary guidance in terms of when to deploy it. So that... it's often left to the policeman in charge to kind of make the decision whether, you know, what force needs to be exerted in a particular situation. And I think that's where some of the difficulties emerge.
That's exactly right. I mean, the movie touches upon, for example, the use of tear gas, right, which, you know, there's a statement made by one police chief in the movie, which is, you know, you use tear gas, you know, to disperse a riot. But when there's a peaceful protest, when there's a curfew, you do not then fire tear gas into that crowd in order to disperse the crowd that is not being violent. Because when you do that, then you incite a riot. And that seems to be one of the things that happened in Ferguson. So again, just fascinating stuff. Must watch. Go see.
Okay.
Moving on then. Movie number three is Keep Quiet.
So Keep Quiet is directed by Joseph Martin and Sam Blair. And again, according to the Tribeca notes, I haven't seen this movie. A passionate anti-Semite was a rising star in Hungary's far-right party until he discovers his family's secret that his maternal grandparents were in fact Jewish. The revelation prompts an improbable but seemingly heartfelt conversion from anti-Semitism to Orthodox Jewish, to being an Orthodox Jew. Keep Quiet explores the complex and contradictory character of this individual, Segadi, prompting deep questions about his epiphany.
Wow, what a great premise.
Yeah, so I think I'm the only one that watched this. So if this wasn't true, you would think this is the logline of a crazy movie, right? But this is true. And what's fascinating to me are two things. One, that in 2006, Hungary almost had a pro-Nazi party or has a pro-Nazi party. And then secondly, the role of this incredible rabbi who takes it upon himself to save this person. And that story is almost as important and central within this documentary as this guy who is a pro-Nazi nationalist who ends up finding out that he is Jewish, because Judaism, as we know, is passed down the maternal line, and his maternal grandmother was in Auschwitz.
Wow.
This is an incredible documentary. This blew my mind. I mean, what's fascinating is that there are people in here who say, I'm not racist. I'm just a peasant who values tradition and values and culture.
Often, I mean, that is how any kind of divisional mindset evolves,
of course,
right? It's like, I'm not against those people. I just am for my particular thing.
Right. And what's fascinating is to watch the nationalization of a country. And I fear, and again, this is very topical given what's happening in the US, mm-hmm, given the Trump thing, yeah, which I don't want to get too political, but it's amazing how when there is an economic downturn, that those who are in that economic downturn often want to blame someone for that economic downturn, and how the tides change, how they change so quickly.
Well, it's very easily exploited by politicians, and I think that's the thing that we all always need to be afraid of. But
yeah.
But just go back to the film itself. How did they get access to this person?
Oh, yeah. Basically, this is all interviews. So we're now looking in 2014, and this guy, Sadi, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
So how does he deal with that?
I mean, Sana Zagadi.
Sana Zagadi. So basically, the whole premise of the movie is that he's basically risen in the ranks in this Hungarian National Party. And basically, there's this other guy who realizes that they have found documents about his grandmother. And so this rumor starts, and he confronts this person, and he says, hey, hang on, what's happening? And he says, listen, we have the documents with your grandmother's tattoo on the documents. And basically, he has been, had his head in the sand a little bit. His grandmother was deported from Auschwitz when the war ended, and she was adopted by the Kleins in Germany, and who then moved to Hungary. And so basically, they grew up as Germans in Hungary.
Does it
with the surname Klein. And so he never had any cause to debate that he was Jewish or not Jewish. He didn't really talk about her past. She was very young when she was deported and never really spoke about it. And so I think the thing that works really well in this is often we hate and despise the things without knowing that we fear are within us, ourselves. So I almost wonder if the family became so nationalist because they feared in some way that maybe there was a Jewish connection.
Yeah.
No. And there have been so many stories of willfully anti-Semitic people who found out eventually that they were actually Jewish.
It's fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating.
I think Madeleine Albright found out very late in her life that she had Jewish heritage. And she was not anti-Semitic. I'm just saying as an example of somebody found out, you know, later on.
I actually worked with someone. Correct. You found out through 23andMe.
I did, indeed. I have some Ashkenazi Jewish blood
correct.
In me.
Correct.
I would have never guessed. And not that I'm anti-Semitic or anti-anything, but...
Right. We actually worked with someone who was raised Greek Orthodox and realized late in his life that he was of Jewish origin and actually had property in Romania that had been, you know, pillaged by the Nazis.
Does
Very
the movie explore any themes related to culture versus race? Because I think one of the things about, you know, that the being anti-Semitic is often, to me, an attack against culture. But I think it goes a little deeper than that in Eastern Europe in particular, where people think of it more as a race, like a separate ethnicity.
It's a separate ethnicity issue in this movie. And I think ultimately what it does come down to is... probably the last third of the movie is spent in Auschwitz. And so we see again the horrors, which we should keep seeing again and again. We see the horrors that took place in Auschwitz and then narrated by someone who's a survivor and all of that survival guilt, you know, survivor's guilt comes up. Mm-hmm. But again, like I want to stress that as important of the story is this guy who's got to make this transition from anti-Semite to Orthodox Jew is this amazing rabbi who he connects with, who helps him on that travel. And that's an amazing man, right? Because I think religious leaders, it's easy to say that religion should forgive, but to live that and breathe that, and then to face someone who was against your race right. and what probably wants you dead, to have to work with that person, that's amazing.
Remarkable.
Very good documentary. I would recommend this one.
Movie number four is Pistol Shrimps. So Pistol Shrimps is written and directed by Brent Hodge, and Morgan Spurlock has a hand in this. So Morgan Spurlock certainly had me interested in this. The description here in the Tribeca Guide is that they spin a variation of the classic underdog story told in fun-loving and freewheeling style. Their focus, an eclectic group of actresses, musicians, writers, comedians, and moms who compete in Los Angeles's Women's Recreational Basketball League. So if there ever was a movie that sounded like a lot of fun, that sounds like it. What did you think of Pistol Shrimps? And if you can, just please explain the name to me when you do that.
It's the most odd name. So if you get tired, or if you find that movies about police violence and the militarization of the police force, or movies about people who convert from being anti-Semitic to becoming Orthodox Jews, it becomes a little heavy for you, then Pistol Shrimps is exactly the antidote for you. I mean, I cannot think of a more happy, silly, goofy, good-hearted, just a fun little documentary. It really has no... You know, good documentary should change the world. This documentary is not going to change the world. It really doesn't have any agenda behind it. It just wants to say these people exist. It was a group of women who were either comedians or actors or models or even an accountant, I believe.
A lawyer
who were living in the LA.
An entertainment lawyer.
Yeah, and all in the entertainment industry who came together just almost on a lark to form their own women's basketball team. And the first year that they played, they were the worst team. They had members on the team who didn't even know how to play basketball. And then somehow something switched in the second year and they started winning teams. And then the documentary kind of follows them from game to game and has the different members of the team talk about what it has meant to them, how it has fit in with their schedule. I think Aubrey Plaza, who is on television, I think is the most famous member of that team. And it was a really good way for me to spend 90 minutes. I had fun.
Now, did they get better through hard work and perspiration?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. They hire some coaches and they actually have some podcasters that travel with them podcast every single game. Can I just tell you, this is the most fun you will have at Tribeca Film Festival, without a doubt. I had watched Keep Quiet, and then I'm going to talk about the next movie I saw, which was After Spring. I was literally bawling my eyes out. I was about 5 to 10 minutes late for this one. I was kind of wondering, shall I go in or not? The name itself is so hilarious. And I went in, and thank God I went in, because I was then crying with laughter. I literally had a smile on my face the entire time, and I was belly laughing. This is a group of amazing women. These are fantastic role models. If you have daughters, you must watch this documentary, because each one of these women, they're funny within their own right. They're talented within their own right. And they are such fun. This is, and all the people that work with them, what they do off the court, what they do on the court. They've literally won the league through sheer hard work. And it's amazing. And it made me... I have to say, so I'm going to get a bit mushy. I think what it does for these women is, and I think, I can't remember which one says it, they practice every Sunday and they all say that, you know, even if they don't feel like going, when they go, they feel so good for it. And it's really about empowering each other and being a team. Mm-hmm. And they all make each other better. And it made me think of you guys, because it made me realize how much I love doing Movie Wallahs, because Aww. It's so different to what we do in our day job. And I love hanging out with you both. Aww. And I love doing this. And I think we all make each other better. And this is about Movie Wallahs. It's not about each one of us. And that's exactly how this documentary is. Fantastic.
Of course, we don't practice. Well, which you can
we
tell.
Talk a lot.
We talk.
No, I'm but kidding.
That's why I talk a lot.
Yeah, it's a human spirit, that kind of...
It's a human spirit story. Brilliant.
But see, I mean, Hollywood is so competitive. It's so cutthroat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're a female comedian or if you're a female writer or if you're a female, you know, actor. You're gonna lose more jobs than you're
Correct.
Gonna land any.
Right.
And so in that, when you're living in that kind of an environment, to have something of constancy, something of fun, something where they can rely on each other, means quite a lot. And I must say, you did talk about the two people who come and do live podcasts. They kind of almost do a live.
They're hilarious.
They are kind of like they're like from a Christopher Guest movie. They're like from Best
they're
in
hilarious.
Show.
Hilarious.
And these two guys, they don't necessarily know a lot of basketball, but they're just hilarious because they're giving running commentary. And you know, we see them. We see their coaches. One of them has a daughter. We see the opposite team.
They have hilarious names. This women's recreational league
yeah.
has the most hilarious names. The Princess Layabouts.
Yeah.
I mean, they have just the best names. This is a semi-serious league. I mean, the women who play basketball take it really seriously. Wonderful, wonderful documentary with a great soundtrack. Loved it.
Very good sound. And since you asked, and since most people ask, what the hell does Pistol Shrimp mean?
Yes.
They wanted to come up with a name of something which was like aggressive and kind of fun. And it turns out that there is this shrimp which exists in the water, which
It has like a little claw.
It has, yeah, go on.
Which it basically like cocks like a gun. And apparently when the claw shuts, it creates like a sonic boom that scares all the other prey away.
Prey away. So it's kind of this really mean kind of...
Shrimp.
Yeah, mean shrimp.
And it's called a pistol shrimp
because it's one hand, one claw is bigger than the other. And all it does is it just snaps and releases this bubble of water. So somebody there identified with it, and that's how they named themselves. Yeah.
Brilliant. Awesome. Absolutely brilliant.
Awesome. All right, moving on then. Movie number 5 of this podcast is Don't Look Down.
Okay. So Don't Look Down is directed by Daniel Gordon, and this is basically about Sir Richard Branson. So in the late 80s and early 90s, daredevil entrepreneur Sir Richard Branson made an audacious attempt to cross the Atlantic and Pacific in the world's largest hot air balloon, which I would never do. I'm too scared. So Don't Look Down is a personal revelation, a dramatic tale, a survival and drive. I think Branson must be one of the most driven people ever on this earth. Branson recounts his experience with uncanny vividity and reveals how baiting death forever changed him. And Joe, I think you're the only one of us that saw this one.
Yeah, interestingly enough, this wasn't in our pocket guide that they give at the film festival. So if you are wandering around Tribeca thinking, where is this movie? It's not actually in the pocket guide. It is in the main guide. And I think it's also on the website. So I'm not sure if this was a late entry or not. I walked into it somewhat serendipitously because the timing of one movie versus another led me into the opportunity of watching this. And boy, was I glad that I did. I mean, this is my kind of stuff.
I was going to say, it sounds right up your street.
So, you know, I'm very much a big fan of these kind of man versus nature type things. I love movies like, you know, the Kilimanjaro, you know, climbing the Everest, climbing type movies. And this is another one where...
Watching
you know,
paint dry.
The seeming conquest of the Atlantic and the Pacific by a hot air balloon sounds like such a, you know... Why does anyone do that? Well, Richard Branson is a unique individual, as we know. He is the kind of person that, you know, throughout his life, he's obviously a self-made, you know, gazillionaire, but he's also pushed himself. And this whole strive to do these balloon rides was part publicity because they got enormous publicity at times that were very convenient for him business-wise, but also just part of the spirit of the man. And he wants to do something that is genuinely difficult, something that no one has ever done before, something that takes resources that he has. And this movie starts off by talking about his Virgin Atlantic crossing. So this was the first trip that he made with Per Lindstrand in a balloon from the coast of North America over to, ostensibly England, although he ended up nearly dying in the attempt. I don't know if you remember any of this back in the 80s, but the attempt was perilously dangerous. I mean, the movie gets into it with some kind of unseen footage. A lot of this stuff hasn't been shown publicly before. They had a lot of cameras on the balloons and they've never exposed these tapes to a public audience before. So a lot of what they went through, how they almost escaped death, how the ending of the whole thing was a tragic catastrophe in terms of, you know, the losing life of both men. Just a fantastic kind of documentation of the kind of spirit that these pioneers have to do this stuff. Second part of the documentary is a much less known effort where they tried twice, first time unsuccessfully even getting off the ground to cross the Pacific, something that had never been done. And again, this story was ended up being drowned out in the public eye because halfway across the Pacific, as they were, again, perilously in danger of dying, the Gulf War broke out. And so their completion of their mission ended up being drowned out completely by the media because obviously we were at war. And so the heroics and the difficulties that they had even surviving this second trip were drowned out. But anyway, fascinating stuff. It's the kind of thing that I think you would switch on and see on the Discovery Channel on a Sunday afternoon. So it's not a movie that I would run out and recommend and say you go see in the movie theater, but really, really good stuff.
It sounds a little propaganda-ish. Is it Branson saying, look how great I am?
It's other people saying, look how great he is. Okay. So, I mean, he's in it a lot. I think he tends to approach it with some humility. But at the same time, you know, there's no doubt that there's a celebration here of the remarkable achievement of both men in terms of, you know, doing this flight. So, yes, it is a little bit yay me. I wonder about the timing, because obviously Virgin Galactic, their space flight program, is underway again. So I think that, you know, part of the reason he did these balloon trips in the first place was to draw public attention. So the Virgin Atlantic crossing was done at around the time that he was moving his Virgin businesses over to the United States. So he wanted to build that kind of awareness. Mm. The Virgin Pacific crossing, it was the same kind of thing where he was making a big push into Japan with the Virgin brand and the Virgin businesses. So it was a great way of getting enormous publicity at the time. And you can't blame him for that. That's his job as an entrepreneur. But
yeah, I wonder if he's a bit worried that Elon Musk is kind of stealing his thunder a little bit, and this is an attempt to kind of claw back. Look, Elon Musk is one of my, you know,
so cynically, disciples. Cynically, you can look at it that way. These movies are very much about the Atlantic crossing and the teams.
Right.
You know, that Branson himself is portrayed very much as kind of the novice guy that built a fabulous team of people that could help him get this done. So he really does nothing more in the movie, as he's portrayed very much as being the kind of person who makes it happen financially, but really goes for a ride in a hot air balloon that is piloted and built and developed by this extraordinary team of individuals. Good stuff. Good stuff. Go see it.
Okay.
Moving on then, final movie is After Spring.
I must say, there's a lot of like, do not look down, do not resist, keep quiet, After Spring. The titles are kind of very...
We should try and build a sentence from all of this.
Yeah.
I think it's the kind of statements that you can use to raise children.
Yes.
Don't be quiet, don't look down, After Spring. So After Spring is directed by Ellen Martinez and Steph Ching. It's a documentary, and it's essentially the story of the refugee camps where 80,000 Syrian refugees moved to in Jordan. It's the second largest camp in the world. 58% of the inhabitants are children. And After Spring immerses us in the rhythms of the camp and the role of the aid workers, the daily lives of two families as they contemplate an uncertain future. So, Rashmi, I think you're the only one of us that got to see this one. What did you think of it?
This is devastating. This is one of the most devastating documentaries I've ever watched. And I don't think I've cried as much in a documentary. And the reason it moved me so much is, well, first of all, I think there's a quote that's in the documentary that says, the Syrian refugee crisis is probably the biggest crisis in this era. And nothing seems to be happening to help it. Okay, and I don't want to get political again. I think having come out of Keep Quiet straight into this one was not a good move for me.
Wow.
But I think, so here's a camp. It's Camp Zaatari. It's basically the biggest camp. And what it does is it follows people. It follows the people who work there. It follows families who've been there since the beginning. It follows people who are coming into the camp. And now there are 80,000 people that live in what they used to call temporary housing. And now they're moving a lot of these people who used to be in tents into what they call these caravans. And it's basically prefab trailers that get delivered to the camp. And I think what's moving about it is this resignation amongst the people who are there about, you know, we're probably here for the next... who knows when, right? So they enter the camp thinking they're only going to be there for 4 months to 6 months to 1 year. And now we're in the sixth year of this crisis. Mm. And people have had children who have been born there who have never walked outside the camp. And what's amazing to me is almost this story about the human spirit. And what starts off as a camp now has infrastructure, shops. It's kind of like what... It kind of reminded me, I studied the Romans when I was a kid in school, and you know how there was like money and how the Romans invented trade, and that's what's happening there. People are really resourceful and they want to have a better life, and even in a camp they feel like they deserve a better life, and so they have to make that themselves. And so I think what's really important about this movie is the human spirit, what the human spirit will do to save, you know, as a man who has to put food on the table, or parents who have to look after their children and put a roof over their heads, what people have to do to save their kids from being shelled or bombed, the reasons why people come there.
I was going to say, does it get into that at all? Because, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of spotlight in recent months regarding, you know, the migration of Syrian refugees into Europe. But there's an enormous number of them that moved into Jordan, and we hear very little about that.
Correct. And this is that documentary. So Zatari is in Jordan. And at one point you actually hear bombing in Syria because it's over the border. It's just fascinating. And then there's this other part of the story, which is the people who volunteer their time to work there. And, you know, the UNIH who provides funding. And then people who decide that there's this Korean guy who basically is a Taekwondo expert. And he's lived in the Middle East for the last 20 years. And he basically decides to take a group of his teachers and set up a Taekwondo camp there. Because what he's saying is that this could end up being the lost generation. These children who are very young need something to help them escape. And so he builds a Taekwondo camp. And the impact of that is incredible.
Does the movie get into it all why 58% of these are children? What's happened to their parents? Or are these just people who have large families?
Yeah, these are people who have large families. And unfortunately, whether you agree or disagree, there isn't much education about contraception. And so people are just continually having children there. And what they believe is God keeps giving us children. Well, it's a certain culture that we're dealing with. And it's very patriarchal, and women are oppressed. And again, I don't want to get too political with my views on this, but you know, I think maybe some education around contraception could help the situation. But we have people with these large families who are coming in, and they've escaped Syria because they want to save their children, and more are being birthed in these camps.
Yeah, and it seems this documentary is being executive produced by Jon Stewart, so hopefully it'll get due recognition and it'll show up in enough cinema screens. I for one really want to watch
it. It's really well made. I mean, it's not manipulative. I think it's very easy. It could have been very easy to be manipulated by it, but these are just people who are trying to survive.
And not to politicize this, but you know, the whole Syrian refugee thing has become such a big issue even within the United States political climate right now with the different candidates. I think it would be good for people to see another viewpoint on it.
Yeah.
Because people now think, a lot of people have their own views about this.
So. I mean, this is really about the lengths that people go to in order to feel safe and live without fear. It's as simple as that. Whatever your political view is on the situation or not, really, this is about those people who try and escape fear and they just want to protect their families. And the wonderful people who volunteer to help those people. Amazing. Very moving. Really got under my skin. I was literally sobbing.
Well, let's wrap up this coverage of day two at Tribeca Film Festival. So let us know what you think. We are Instagramming our way through the festival. So do check out our somewhat newly utilized Instagram account at instagram.com/moviewallahs, where you just search for Movie Wallahs using the app. Go to twitter.com/moviewallahs, facebook.com/moviewallahs as well. Until tomorrow, where we'll try and give you our next dose of Tribeca fun. It's too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.